right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, August 18th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is 79 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. I think last night when I looked at AccuWeather, it said it was approximately 85% humidity. Yes, these are the dog days of August, and it was going to go up to about 92% humidity this afternoon. It is some of the nastiest days of the summer right now, so stick near an air conditioner with a fan blowing on your nether regions, is all I have to say. All right, where did we leave off yesterday? We talked about some real insanity by the end of the show. The show was titled Biotech Act of 2015, Regrowing Arms and Pig-Human Hybrids. If you remember, we looked at this new one of quite a number of federal documents that have either been passed, published, inked, or are sitting on the floor somewhere to be passed that all have to do with synthetic biology, biotechnology, and bringing this human 2.0 into play. We read about the national bioeconomy that's going to save our economy, of course, by investing in 21st century mad science gone mad technologies. We also looked at some of the synthetic biology edicts coming down, where we started looking at the Department of Energy, but we found out that it is across the board pretty much with agencies in the federal government that all have synthetic biology projects going on for this, that, and the other thing. We're going to take a look at some of that. Then, of course, there's this regenerative, quote-unquote, medicine, like taking arms off of monkeys. I mean, it was just horrifying. And the more I read, I mean, you would think that as time went on that we would become a more ethical species, but it hasn't happened. What's happened is we've become a more insane, off-the-rails species with absolutely no rules. Like, anything goes now. Anything goes. When you can grow an arm on a monkey, and then you can gut that arm of all the meat and all the proteins and use some detergent to clean the thing out, and then start using not stem cells, but even better than that, progenitor cells, to then start layering and growing all of the recipient's cells in that scaffold of the monkey's arm to then put it on a person. What kind of planet are we? Why? What's going to happen to that poor monkey? That's all I can say. And I mean, this is just the beginning. You know, I was reading about head swapping that they were doing in Russia back in who the hell knows when. I'm sure you've seen those really disturbing videos back from maybe the 40s, maybe the 50s, the 60s. I don't know when they're from, where they were like transplanting a second head on a dog. I mean, that's barbaric. As a human being, I honestly thought that we had gotten beyond like that 1930s Frankenstein mentality. But oh no. Oh no. Or what was that Japanese horrible research center during World War II, that unit 731 or whatever, they were doing all kinds of horrifying things. Look it up. But oh no, we've gotten way beyond that now. And it is anything goes at a viral and a microbial level to boot. We got good old DARPA out in the forefront, made science gone mad, and it's acceptable and paid for with taxpayer dollars right across the board. So anyway, oh, yeah, and then let's get back that pig-human hybrid, right? They put five different human genes into a pig to be able to utilize that pig to actually grow organs that then they can cut out and, oh, I don't know, transplant. What did we read yesterday? They transplanted the heart from a pig to a monkey for 765 days or something. Now they want to start using them to grow organs for donor or for, yeah, as a donor animal for people who need transplants for things such as kidneys or hearts or whatever. Where's the ethics in that? Hey, DARPA was talking about growing bodies on a chip, and they were doing all kinds of research of growing organs in petri dishes using 3D printing. You know, I don't know. I honestly, I don't see a lot of anything wrong with using something like 3D printing to maybe print a heart or a liver, especially if it's using your own cells, and they probably would scan your organs somehow, get a nice 3D image of it to then build a little scaffold and then print the cells on and let them grow. I mean, that's close to being natural, even though it's kind of in a dish. But hey, you could say the same thing for in vitro fertilization. You know, they're mixing them up in a petri dish and see what happens. But growing shit inside animals to then just hack it out and give it to somebody else. Or I saw this one professor. Maybe I could find that story. This is the bizarrest thing ever. This professor. Hold on. I got like, I am at the limit of the number of tabs being able to be open without crashing a computer here. So we must tread very carefully. Probably like the last 3 weeks of research are all open, plus all the stuff I wanted to talk about today. There was a professor, and I don't remember what university he was from, but it was a pretty prestigious university where he was literally growing an ear out of his arm for research purposes. Hold on, Mamie, I don't know. This is on my WTF page, so there's lots of freaky stuff here. But maybe we can find it. Otherwise, I might have to wait until I play one of these clips, and we'll have to go back and locate it. I don't know. Come on, one more. Ah, here he is. Nutty professor grows an ear on his arm. Oh, yeah. And he plans to connect it to the internet so the world can listen to him. Now, have we just gone completely insane? Because I think so. Says, as if growing an ear out of your arm isn't bizarre enough. Now, artist Stellark plans to connect the internet to his new organ. It took the Curtin University professor 10 years after coming up with the idea in 1996 to get a team of medical experts to agree to his unusual request. But the strange project doesn't end there, as the Perth-based artist plans to make the organ more three-dimensional by lifting it off his left arm and growing an earlobe from his own stem cells. What? Seriously, this stuff is just so bizarre. Then a miniature microphone will be inserted into the ear that can wirelessly connect to the internet. And believe it or not, this has been attempted before, but when the microphone had to be removed due to an infection, the experiment ended. This ear is not for me, because I've got two good ears to hear with, he says. This ear is a remote listening device for other people in other places. They'll be able to follow a conversation or hear sound if I'm at a concert, wherever I am, and wherever you are. The ear will also be trackable through GPS. I mean, I was reading this the other day, and I'm like, what? This is just like completely loop-de-loo. And I mean, this is how I am seeing science in general today. It's just like this. This is a prime example of the lunacy that is going on. I think as a species, we've gone completely insane. It says the ear will also be trackable through GPS. And Sterlak said that the mic will be switched on all of the time without an on-off switch. Yeah. Just like they want us to do. Just don't worry about it. Let us surveil wherever you go and what you hear, see, do. We won't tell anybody. Increasingly now, people are becoming internet portals of experience. Yeah, this is the next step to transhumanism. Imagine if I could hear with the ears of someone in New York. Imagine if at the same time I could see with the eyes of someone in London. If I am not in a Wi-Fi hotspot or I switch off my home modem, then perhaps I'll be offline. But the idea is to actually try to keep the ear online at all times. Miraculously, the ear only took 6 months for tissue and blood vessels to develop around the scaffold structure inserted by doctors into his arm. See, I remember in the very beginning, I think that's one of the very first quote-unquote 3D printings that they did of a body part was an ear for somebody who had had an accident where they lost their outer ear. And so they printed them a 3D ear to be replaced out of some sort of stem cells at the time. There was someone else. Oh, this was probably about a year ago. The dude lost his nose in an accident, and they actually regrew his nose on one of his other body parts. I don't remember. I think it was on his forehead. There were pictures of it. Search that. Regrew nose on forehead. It was pretty whacked out looking. I think it was in China. It was Chinese. Says, miraculously, the ear only took 6 months for tissue and blood vessels to develop around the scaffold structure inserted by doctors. And people's reactions range from bemusement to bewilderment to curiosity. Well, I'd have to say I'm pretty bewildered. But you really don't expect people to understand the art component of all this, says the complete lunatic. I mean, come on. Growing an ear on your forearm is not what I would consider art unless I was part of the Google AI Dream Project. I don't know if you've seen any of those images, but they're pretty out there insane. Says how the ear has grown on Stellark's arm in his own words. I'm not going to dwell on this because I have a lot to talk about today, but this really got me. The project has been ongoing for the past 12 years. A quarter scale ear was grown involving growing small replicas of my ear using living cells. And recently, the ear on arm, which began the surgical construction of a full-sized ear on my forearm, one that would transmit the sounds that it hears. Excess skin was created with an implant skin expander in the forearm. And by injecting saline solution into a subcutaneous port, the kidney-shaped silicon implant stretched the skin, forming a pocket of excess skin that then could be used to surgically construct the ear. The body is a living system, which isn't easy to surgically sculpt, and recovery time is needed after the surgical procedures. And there were several serious problems that occurred. A necrosis during the skin expansion process necessitated excising it and rotating the position of the ear around the arm. Oh my God. You know what? When you start ending up with necrosis of the skin, I think it's a sign. Around the ear that you're growing in your arm. It's a sign. The second surgery inserted a metapore scaffold and the skin was suctioned over it. The metapore implant is porous, biocompatible polyethylene material with pore sizes ranging from 100 to 250 micrometers, and this can be shaped into several parts and sutured together to form the shape of the ear. So there you go. So you know what? What is 21st century biology and mad science gotten us? Being able to grow ears on your forearm. I am so glad that we are a part of it all. So all right, now we're going to get to more serious stuff. So we've spent time looking at precision medicine. This was back quite a number of months ago. The tie-in to Obamacare. Getting us all into a big national database, not just for your healthcare records, because they had to get rid of those pesky HIPAA laws, but also for genomics. also for surveillance. Don't forget, they're collecting huge amounts of every part of your life about you that at some point in the future is going to make you a cash cow. You know, they're going to be able to sell software as a service stats on every person in the world to the highest bidder, or for $29.95 a month. You know, you got cyber patrol centers, Microsoft being one of the big corporations that's jumped on board, and they're going to like bridge the gap between government and private industry to make sure that in the name of national security, they keep us all safe, people. But we also find out that back in 1972, when Nixon, and I should really look this up because I talk about it all the time and I never remember the name of the agreement. But you know what? I'm not going to do it right now. We'll do it tomorrow. But I think it was like the Geneva Convention. It was something like that. It was the one agreement that they inked internationally for everyone to jump on board and get rid of biological weapons, because there was a biological weapons race and a chemical weapons race going on at that time. And we were getting pretty scared. You know, they were doing all kinds of crazy research with insects as disease vectors, if you remember. We looked at mosquitoes. We looked at ticks. We looked at fleas and all the different things that they could spread and what perfect little disease vectors they were. We looked at Plum Islands and how suspicious. We read that whole story about the one scientist who came over from Operation Paperclip in Germany after the war, lived very near Plum Island, and visited there quite a number of times. And oh, lo and behold, when you looked into his research in Germany, it happened to do with biowarfare and using insects as disease vectors. Yeah, no connection there at all. But we find out that when Nixon inked that agreement to end the biowarfare program in the United States, the one thing that he held on to was the fact that we had to go on a defensive posture to keep the nation safe with what? Oh, vaccines. And how interesting with vaccines, to be able to make a vaccination for some pathogen, you have to keep the pathogen around to be able to do testing and develop stuff, right? So what a nice, happy little back door into being able to continue our biowarfare program under the guise of keeping the American public and now the globe, big international vaccine companies, the globe safe from pandemics. Well, you know, after Johnny ruined everybody's Disney World vacation, the vaccines came up in the forefront. They really started to push this mantra now because everybody should get vaccinated. We now have mandatory vaccination bills for children in California. They're pushing them in New York. And I think there's 10 other states now that have gotten rid of exemptions, religious or otherwise. I think New York, they're still saying that maybe for health exemption, but you have to have some sort of like reliable, verifiable doctor to sign off on this, and I could guarantee you it wouldn't be very easy to get an exemption. We also have the Vaccinate All Children Act of 2015 in front of the House of Representatives. They're going to push that. We also have that 2020, hold on, somewhere in here, I have had this up for about 2 weeks to talk about it. Oh, bing, bing, bing. Hold on, I'm rolling over all my tabs. Mars Orbiter? No. Therapeutics? No. I don't know. I just was looking at this the other day, and it might be gone now. There was a 2020, and we've talked about this before, though. It was about vaccinating all adults. I mean, they really literally are going out. This is going to be Buck Rogers of the 21st century, this new bioeconomy that isn't just here. This is something that they are rolling out globally. This bioeconomy of the 21st century. And, of course, vaccines are a big part because, hey, guys, with global warming that you people are responsible for, feel very ashamed, but we could fix this. But in the meantime, this global warming is causing pandemics, and you have to be afraid, but don't worry about it because with this new bioeconomy, We have the cure. And not only do we have the cure to these never before seen or, oh my God, you anti-vaxxers, because you're not vaccinating your children, these diseases that we thought were eradicated 100 years ago are showing up back on stage. It's all your fault, anti-vaxxers. So because of that, there is no more free choice. Everybody line up, because we got all these new technologies that we've been experimenting with. And oh, by the way, Congress made sure that they signed it off, so there's no liability anymore for the vaccine companies. Don't worry about it, because it's all in the name of safety of the majority. It has nothing to do with you, little Johnny. Nothing personal. Sorry we gave you autism and brain damage. But you know what? The 10 million other Sallys and Susies are just fine. You were collateral damage. So anyway, getting to all this, and we find out the FDA has been allowing fraudulent reports about not just vaccines, about anything. All kinds of research. They didn't discriminate. They've been allowing all kinds of shit to be published in medical journals for years, mind you. And even if research had been shown to be fraudulent, to be broken, something wrong with it, they never redacted it. So we got all these people, all these agencies, including the CDC, sitting there pointing, going, look, look at the research. Look at the research. Make sure you vote on the bill to pass mandatory vaccines, because look at the research. Your kids may be in danger if we don't vaccinate everybody. Well, story came out on August 1st, 2015. And I am amazed that this did not make headline news. And I guess, no, really, I'm not. But I wish somebody could get out there and blow the lid off this thing. Congressman wants the CDC investigated for tampering with the MMR study. Now, if you remember, the MMR vaccine is the one that all these crazy tinfoil hat wearing anti-vaxxers have claimed for the longest time is responsible, at least in a number of cases, for autism. And they vehemently denied it. Well, check this out. It says, the following is a transcript of a statement read on the floor of the United States House of Representatives on July 29th, 2015 by U.S. Representative Bill Posey, Republican from Florida, of Florida's 8th District. And if you, too, I just want to stop before I read this. Just recently, too, I think we're up to 10 or 13 doctors now who have mysteriously had accidents, you know, ended up duct taped off a bridge, or no, actually the one guy like shot him, committed suicide by shooting himself in the chest while in a lake fishing. Right? I mean, these were the doctors that were working on that protein that they discovered was in the vaccines that they think was causing autism. And then with the cure, that GCMAF or something like that, and all these naturopath doctors that were trying to do the right thing by their patients have ended up dead now. Not that biopharma doesn't have like a huge bucket of money that they could, oh, I don't know, maybe go out to Silk Road and hire someone to do somebody in. So I would be very careful if I were U.S. Representative Bill Posey. So check this out. This is the transcript. It is troubling to me. And this is Bill Posey, I think. Or maybe it's the author. I don't know. Let's read it. It is troubling to me that in a recent Senate hearing, oh yeah, okay, it's the article, on childhood vaccinations, it was never mentioned that our government has paid out over $3 billion to a vaccine injury compensation program for children who have been injured by vaccinations. Regardless of the subject matter, parents making decisions about their children's health deserve to have the best information available to them, and they should be able to count on federal agencies to tell them the truth. This is him, by the way. This is the statement of Posey. For these reasons, I bring the following matters to the House floor. In August 2014, Dr. William Thompson, a senior scientist at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, worked with a whistleblower attorney to provide my office with documents related to a 2004 CDC study that examined the possibility of a relationship between the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine and autism. In a statement released in August of 2014, Dr. Thompson stated, quote, "I regret that my co-authors and I omitted statistically significant information in our 2004 article published in the Journal of Pediatrics." Mr. Speaker, and this is Posey talking on the floor of the House. Mr. Speaker, I respectfully request that the following excerpts from the statement written by Dr. Thompson be entered into the congressional record. Now quoting Dr. Thompson, quote, "My primary job duties while working in the immunization safety branch from 2000 to 2006 were to lead or co-lead three major vaccine safety studies." Now, let's pause for 1 second on this because this is very important, but I want to talk about quickly, mention two things that we've looked at over the last few weeks. One was that former CDC head, and I don't remember her name, but she was like from 2001 to 2009. She was the head of the CDC. She was the one in charge when the whole swine flu pandemic happened and we opened the doors and fast-tracked the FDA for that new swine flu vaccine loaded with squalene from Europe, who then left to take over as president of Merck's vaccine division. Remember that story? Yeah. So being the head of the CDC, pushing all these vaccines, opening the door to mad science gone mad, stuff that was never tested or approved here, but because of the name of emergency and Obama declaring a pandemic emergency, it just opened the floodgates. But also remember, back a few weeks ago, we looked at the 1970s swine flu, the original swine flu, and the vaccine that did tons of neurological damage to all kinds of people. And there was a 60 Minutes expose we listened to. It was from like 1977 or something. And they were grilling the then CDC chief and talking with the scientist who blew the whistle saying, "Hey, this isn't safe. This isn't safe. Our research has shown there's all kinds of neurological problems." He told his boss. They covered that information up, allowed the swine flu vaccine to get out, and lots of people were hurt by it. I saw, actually, they've renamed it now. They don't call swine flu anymore. And I think it's because it had too much publicity. They now call it one of the H1N somethings. That was in a story I was reading yesterday. All right, anyway, let's get back to the statement now. So we've established a little bit of history, at least two cases that we know that we're going to call absolute, utter, total bullshit on the vaccine programs and them keeping us, quote unquote, safe. All right, anyway, now quoting Dr. Thompson, quote, "My primary job duties while working in the immunization safety branch from 2000 to 2006. And this is while that lady was there, by the way, the one who left to go to the head of the vaccination division of Merck. From 2000 to 2006, my job was to lead or co-lead three major vaccine safety studies. The MADDSP MMR autism cases control study was being carried out in response to the Wakefield Lancet study that suggested an association between the MMR vaccine and an autism-like health outcome. There were several major concerns among scientists and consumer advocates outside of the CDC in the fall of 2000 regarding the execution of the Veristatin study. One of the important goals that was determined up front in the spring of 2001, so just before 9/11, before any of these studies started, was to have all three protocols vetted outside the CDC prior to the start of analyses so that consumer advocates could not claim that we were presenting an analysis that suited our own goals and biases. We hypothesized that if we found statistically significant effects at either 18 or 36 month thresholds, we would conclude that vaccinating children early with the MMR vaccine could lead to autism-like characteristics or features. We all met and finalized the study protocol and analysis plan, and the goal was to not deviate from the analysis plan to avoid the debacle that occurred with the Veristatin thimerosal study published in the Pediatrics Journal in 2003. And at that September 5th meeting, we discussed in detail how to code race for both the sample and the birth certificate sample. And at the bottom of Table 7, it also showed that for the non-birth certificate sample, to adjust the race effect, statistical significance was huge. All the authors and I met and decided sometime between August and September of 2002 not to report any race effects for the paper. Sometime soon after the meeting, we decided to exclude reporting any race effects, and the co-authors scheduled a meeting to destroy documents related to the study. The remaining four co-authors all met and brought a big garbage can into the meeting room and reviewed and went through all the hard copy documents that we had thought should be discarded and put them into a huge garbage can. However, because I assumed it was illegal and it would violate both FOIA and DOJ requests, I kept hard copies of all the documents in my office and retained all associated computer files. I believe that we intentionally withheld controversial findings from the final draft of the pediatrics paper. End of quote of the doctor, Mr. Speaker. I believe it is our duty to ensure that the documents Dr. Thompson provided are not ignored. Remember, Dr. Thompson is a CDC insider that worked on that safety study. Another one, just like the swine flu guy. Therefore, I will provide them to members of Congress and the House committees upon request. Considering the nature of the whistleblower's documents, as well as the involvement of the CDC, a hearing and a thorough investigation is warranted. So I ask, Mr. Speaker, I beg, I implore my colleagues on the Appropriations Committee to please, please take some action. And that is the end of the story, but talk about an absolute knock it out of the ballpark evidence. They found that there were issues with the MMR vaccine, and they opted to throw it in the garbage. And then they eviscerated anybody who pointed to that original study that showed a connection. I mean, that's still ongoing. That you, me, any of us that say maybe there's some sort of connection to damage to children is a lunatic. And we're being selfish. Well, no, we're not. And I want to continue on this. And the reason why this is so huge is because what do you think is a big part of this bioeconomy? It's not just vaccines, but we've gone mad science vaccines now. It's RNA vaccines, and good old, who'd we find out? Mr. Bill Gates. I saw today he put in a new $52 million investment into CureVac. And we're going to look at them also. All right, the next story. So let's get back to the swine flu, quote unquote, pandemic from a few years ago, where that CDC woman who then left and went to the president to become president of Merck's vaccine division, but she allowed the doors to open. Yes, that vaccine out of Europe. Here we go. GlaxoSmithKline bills the UK government $92 million to compensate victims who were brain damaged by its own vaccine for swine flu. Yes. And this is the most recent swine flu pandemic. This is not the one from the 70s. And that really wasn't even a pandemic. I was reading something about that again the other day, that they're thinking that that outbreak, quote unquote, outbreak in the 70s was something that got out of a lab. Gee, surprise, considering the Department of Defense and the CDC were shipping anthrax to, oh, I don't know. I don't even remember what the end number ended up, but they were shipping non-killed. They thought they were killing it with radiation, but they really weren't. Non-killed anthrax to labs all over the planet. Yeah. Those places. The ones that keep the most dangerous pathogens. All right. And we're going to look at some of that as well. I got to move, though, because I'm running out of time. All right, so anyway, $92 million that GlaxoSmithKline bills the UK government to pay them back for having to kick out money to brain damaged people who got the newest swine flu vaccine. Says it looks like there is more trouble in vaccine land as a UK-based jab giant GlaxoSmithKline has been exposed for peddling a swine flu vaccine that caused brain damage in potentially thousands of children. But rather than being held responsible, GSK is actually billing the UK government an equivalent of about $92 million to pay for damages, which means that taxpayers are footing the bill. Reports indicate that dozens of pandemic victims in the UK will be awarded about $1.5 million each in British pounds for permanent health damage caused by GlaxoSmithKline's pandemic vaccine. One in 16,000 people who took the vaccine, it turns out, are said to have developed narcolepsy and or cataplexy, two neurological diseases that disrupt normal sleep patterns and muscle function. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention describes narcolepsy as, quote, a chronic neurological disorder caused by the brain's inability to regulate weak sleep-wake cycles normally. The agency also admits that Pandemrix, which was widely administered during the manufactured 2009 swine flu pandemic, increases one's risk of developing narcolepsy. During the 2009-2010 swine flu outbreak, some 60 million people received the Pandemrix jab, and based on a risk of 1 in 16,000, this suggests that nearly 4,000 people have likely developed one of the neurological diseases, with many more cases expected to emerge in the coming months. In each of the cases, if it's paid out roughly $1.5 million, taxpayers could be forced to shell out upwards of $5.6 billion in damages. Throughout Europe, where Pandemrix was primarily administered, and they're saying no Pandemrix vaccines were administered in the U.S. as the vaccine was never licensed and approved for use here. And I don't know about that. They opened the doors with the Declaration of Emergency saying that we did not have enough. Hold on one second. I'm copying and pasting that statement because I'm going to look that up. That we did not have enough swine flu vaccine here to go around. And so we had to open the doors to the vaccine out of Europe that had the squalene in it. And that's why it wasn't approved here. And they let it in. So I'm going to look at that. But anyway, regardless of what it says, there have been 800 reported cases of injuries from vaccines in children. And besides inducing sleep randomly, narcolepsy damages mental function and memory and can lead to hallucinations and, oh, yes, more mental illness. While many people who took the Pandemrix vaccine probably didn't realize, however, as they were lined up like herded sheep to get jabbed. And GSK refused to supply the vaccine to governments without first being indemnified against any damage claims. So now the 92 or so million being shelled out, in other words, isn't actually coming out of their own profits. And yes, in the United States, oh, months and months ago, we actually had read where they had inked a bill saying, hey, guess what? Because of liability, we know it's slowing down innovations. Don't worry about it, because we are going to put a cap on any lawsuits that ever come against you, vaccine company. We'll have a nice big pool of money, and people will have to go in front of a committee and state their case to even be eligible to win anything, and it'll be really hard for them to prove anyway, so don't worry about it. And you can create mad science gone mad and spread it throughout the population without having to worry about being sued. Now, another thing that's kind of interesting, we also have a French national debate going on now on what vaccine safety. Yes, the French are onto them as well. In response to growing skepticism in France about the safety and effectiveness of vaccines, the French Minister of Social Affairs and Health, Marisol Touraine, has called for a national debate this fall on the future of vaccinations in her country. And hey, I hate to tell you, France, but guess what? This is just being done to placate you. Don't worry about it. It's part of the global bioeconomy. We have to be homogenized, vaccinated, and get our little nano vaccines. Who knows what once it's inside our bodies? Shh, we'll make you think that you're in control, France. Because you're a feisty bunch, but in the end, you're not going to win. Touraine, who is concerned that there is great suspicion and even defiance, oh my God, defiance toward vaccines among the French people, seems intent on putting an end to what she seems to believe is a debate driven by rumors rather than science. Yes, and don't worry about all those studies that were fraudulent that were published. Just look at them. Read the stuff that continues our narrative that vaccines are for your own good. It says the issue of vaccine safety in France received renewed media coverage in April following a report by the country's Technical Committee of Pharmacovigilance to the Director of Health regarding the death of two newborn babies in 2014 and 2012, receiving Rotarix and Rotatec vaccines. And I'm going to read out of this document here. It says, according to a recent presentation by the European Ecology MEP, that's a member of the European Parliament, Michel Rivarsiri, vaccine safety, quote, as a general rule, is being questioned. Quote, between 2005 and 2010, the proportion of French people in favor or very in favor of vaccination dropped from a whopping 90% down to 60%. And the percentage of French people between the ages of 18 and 75 who are anti-vaccination increased from a paltry 8.5% in 2005 to now 38.2% of the population of France in 2010, and I would imagine it's even bigger now, were against vaccines. In 2005, 58% of the French doctors questioned the usefulness of vaccines administered to children, while 31% of doctors were expressing doubts about the vaccine safety already in 2005. And it even says these figures must have surely increased by then, since then. And what's important about France and why I'm even bringing them up is because France was the one and only country when Fukushima happened. I was frantic over that, trying to find information about what do we do? What do we do? What's safe? What do we eat? What do we drink? France was the only country on their MERDAP, I don't even remember what their system is. I got a link to it on Fukushima Facts. But each country has like their own radiation monitoring system. France was the only country that actually warned people like a week after Fukushima. Children, pregnant mothers, Stay away from rainwater. Stay away from strawberries. Stay away from drinking milk. From cheeses that aren't aged. I mean, they actually had a list. Stay away from mushrooms because they absorb radiation. I was very thankful to France at that point. They were the only country that opened their mouths and had anything to say about potential issues with Fukushima. All right, I'm really running out of time now, so I'll have all these stories in the links on YouTube after the show goes up. If anyone wants to read these all, I got a whole bunch more, though, I want to talk about. So, all right. Then RT yesterday comes out with something, of course, that we already know. But we'll play just a little clip because I've been ranting here for 47 minutes already.
Even a beating heart.
Uh-oh. Hold on.
He then proceeded to use it to regrow a
Uh-oh.
That three.
Uh-oh. Hold on.
That
hang it up. Hang it up.
I guess that's what they're calling them now.
There we go.
Ever to be.
I don't know. I might have to kill it. No. All right. Good. We'll have to see. Sorry about that. All right. Here we go. New proof that vaccines for pharma profit, not health.
There's a huge debate going on right now in this country over whether or not vaccines are necessary or good for our kids. On one side, we've got individuals who say vaccines are extremely dangerous. On the other, you've got a rich and powerful pharmaceutical industry and Bill Gates. When the power is so lopsided, it's hard to have a rational discussion. So the issue of mandatory vaccines in the U.S. has been relegated to the conspiracy theory bin of our news. But now, a former sales rep for Merck & Co. named Brandy Vaughn just came forward in a YouTube video saying that pharmaceutical companies are just using vaccines as a vehicle for massive profits and that they have nothing to do with public health. Yep, an actual big pharma insider copped to what anti-vaxxers have been saying for a while. Vaughn was a rep for the Merck drug, Vioxx, when it came out that her employer had falsified their safety data.
Wow, surprise! Merck falsified safety data! Yeah, and I mean, this isn't a surprise in any way, shape, or form. And the fact that we know that DARPA is sprinkling money all over the board and creating venture capital for all these new vaccine companies to come out, you know, doesn't make you wonder how this happened. Here, I want to, I'm not going to play that whole clip, but if I can get to this next story. This is out of labbiotech.eu, the European biotech news website. CureVac, yes, this is the $52 million investment from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation using the newfangled mRNA technology. CureVac, a pioneer in the field of mRNA-based technology, today announced that the company has initiated its third largest target product development program in collaboration with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The program will leverage CureVac's DNA active technology platform in the development of a prophylactic vaccine. That means a preventative. That means everybody gets it, regardless if you're sick or not. A prophylactic vaccine to protect against respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, adding to the development programs previously initiated by CureVac and the Gates Foundation, targeting mRNA vaccines for HIV and rotavirus. According to the Center for Disease Control, RSV is a common virus spread through coughing and sneezing that is most prevalent during fall, winter, and spring. Oh, perfect. Timing is absolutely perfect. RSV can be especially serious for infants and older adults. And currently, God forbid, there is no vaccine available to prevent an RSV infection. In March of 2015, the Gates Foundation participated with, and this is the $52 million investment in CureVac's financing around the world in the form of an equity investment to support continued development of CureVac's RNA technology platform and construction of an industrial scale production facility. As a part of this partnership, CureVax and the Gates Foundation anticipate that they will also collaborate on the development and production of numerous vaccines against infectious diseases disproportionately affecting people in the world's poorest countries. Yes, put an X here for your consent to be tested on like a guinea pig. And under the terms of the agreement, any Gates Foundation funded products will be made available by CureVax at what? Oh, an affordable price in poor countries, while CureVax will be able to market such products in developed countries on its own through licensees or a combination of both. Now, what's interesting about that is, you know, it's like, oh, yes, all these poor, poor people dying of things. Good thing Bill Gates is there to put his big cash infusion. Well, check this out. Lessons to learn from the best biotech entrepreneurs. Oh, be a pioneer. Last week, and this was in April, biotech engineers gathered in Berlin for the Charité Entrepreneurship Summit of 2015. And as a spectator, I bring you the most important lessons to take on board from successful entrepreneurs. It says the first speaker was James Sabry, Senior VP at Genentech, which I already interviewed on the strategy of Genentech Roche, the California entrepreneur who founded the NASDAQ-listed company Cytokinetics before joining Genentech, gave us an important glance at the biotech history. Genentech basically gave birth to the biotech era 40 years ago as Herbert Boyer, a pioneer in the field of recombinant DNA technology, demonstrated that restriction enzymes could be used as scissors to cut DNA fragments. Yeah, 40 years ago. These DNA fragments can then be moved from one source to be recombined into another organism via a plasmid, thus creating a genetically modified organism. As Herbert Boyer first knocked on the door of the venture capitalist to fund a company based on this technology, the venture capitalist Robert Swanson asked him, quote, "Will God let you make a new life form like this?" Unquote. Yes, have we been asking those same questions? Despite these first uncertainties, they open the pits of hell, and those are my own words. And these two entrepreneurs joined forces to pioneer a whole new industry. Yes, that whole new industry is genetically modified vaccinations and mad science gone mad. In 1978, the company with Eli Lilly put a synthetic human insulin, the first ever genetically engineered approved human therapeutic, on the market. And in doing so, they launched a major technological field considered to be today's sixth industrial revolution. And how interesting, they're telling us that we're also at the brink of the sixth great extinction. All right, so if it didn't get any worse, I was out on AccuWeather the other day, and I came across a story that I have not seen anywhere else, surprisingly enough. So if you live in Clovis, California, look out. Here it comes. Maybe.
Maybe.
Oh, damn it.
It's your home.
Hold on. I had already played through the commercial, but I guess if I wait too long, they make me listen to it again. All right, I'll read a little bit more. Ingar Horror, the co-founder and CEO of CureVax, followed the story of his company willing to take a lead in the biotech to the next level. He says everything today about biotech is about proteins, and CureVax uses mRNA. All right, here we go. If I can make this unmute.
Neighborhood.
This is a new novel strip.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Get this. Thousands of male mosquitoes are being released into a Clovis, California neighborhood.
This is a new novel strategy. It hasn't been tried anywhere.
It's biological warfare to control the mosquito population.
female.
Did you hear what she just said? They're releasing all these male mosquitoes, and we've read all about some of the crazy stuff that Oxitec is doing with mosquitoes. She literally says it's biological warfare. And this is the first place in the United States that they're doing this, releasing these mosquitoes in Clovis, California.
Need your blood to produce eggs. So 5,000 male mosquitoes are being released to help spread some insecticide. The males pass the insecticide to the females when they mate.
And, you know, they're saying it's a quote-unquote insecticide. Like, oh, yeah, pesticides, we're used to that. But if we actually understand, and we do because we looked at Oxitec, when the male mosquitoes mate with the females, the insecticide is actually what they've done to the DNA of the mosquito. That was the population suppression and population elimination. Once they mate, the new offspring wither and die.
Dusted with a very minute amount of insecticide that kills mosquito larvae, young mosquitoes.
The females then spread the insecticide to water sources where they lay the eggs.
They spread the insecticide to water sources? I don't know, man. This is, and are the people of Clovis all for this? Do they have so much yellow fever in California right now because of, oh, I don't know, climate change, that they're all for letting genetically modified mosquitoes go?
Taking the fight straight to the breeding grounds.
It's really frustrating to not see a reduction in those numbers, which is why we're trying something different, something new, something that we hope will really make a difference.
It will take a few months to kill the next generation, but everyone is hopeful. For more,
we're all hopeful. It's going to take forever to kill the next generation, but don't you worry about it, because we'll make sure we fix you right up. All right, guys, that is about it. I can't believe how fast the show goes sometime. But hey, make sure you stick around, because today is Tuesday, and Tuesday is the night that we are live all night long. Up next, we have Mr. Kevin Blanche with Post Ignorance, and then at 7 p.m. Eastern, it's Mr. Ron Stevens with Game On. 8 o'clock, Against the Wall with JJ. 9 Eastern, Primer Time with Michael and Nick. 10, we have Geoengineering Watch with Dane and Russ. And 11, we have Anti-Media Radio with S.M. Gibson. All right, guys, everybody, make sure you have an awesome Tuesday. And I will catch up with you tomorrow. All right, everybody, take care.